right, good afternoon, or good morning, or good night. Take your pick. Welcome in, Better's Last Stand. Show number 86 coming to you from the Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling. Got a big show today. Sam will join us in the final block to talk some racing, talk about some Pirate baseball. Buccos go down again today to the Angels, so they lose another series to a really bad team at home. We'll talk plenty more about that. Paul Skeen's call up and the waiting game that we're playing there, and doesn't look like he'll be back until they return home from their after the next road trip. So we'll talk Buccos baseball, talk all three racing circuits, news happening in all three, some good, some bad, some in between. So plenty to come there. Recapping last week, it was not very good last week, but I didn't give a lot of plays out because I was focused on the Kentucky Derby, and then we had the big Beer Mile event, which went well. So if you haven't checked that out at the Pine Room Studios, you can watch the archived live stream of that and see all the other action that went on down at the Waterfront Fest on Saturday. So didn't have a ton of plays. We were minus four units across the board if you don't count the golf. Golf, we were actually pretty decent in. We had five of the six guys make the cut, two top fives, up about seven units in golf. So not terrible. But otherwise we were pretty grim. NASCAR was just so, we were 3-2 there, probably a little slow, maybe a slight positive ROI. F1, no good at all. When Max Verstappen goes down, I guess, that's what happens. That's why you don't, bet heavily on him laying those monster prices as, Lando Norris shocks everybody and wins at Miami. AFL, we were 9-7 again, NASCAR 3-2, 0-3 in F1, golf 5-6 guys made the cut. Sam had a couple decent ones in racing as well. Ocon a top 10, which paid well, and Alex Bowman a top 10, which also paid pretty fairly as well. Overall, we would be just a touch above even if you added in the golf, but we'll just say for argument's sake, we were not good. Minus four units, no golf outright winners, no NASCAR outright winners, no F1 outright winners. So wasn't a great week. We were ahead in AFL if you just stuck with that. If you listened to our breakdown of the Kentucky Derby last week, hopefully you were able to box up the trifecta like I had. Fortunately, that came through. Mystic Dan, of course, the winner. And he was a horse that I didn't know if he had the closing kick to win, but it didn't matter. He made first move, and he got right to the lead. He saved great ground. Brian Hernandez is an absolutely awesome ride. Incredible finish. It's just the way it goes. Sierra Leone ran well. Forever Young ran well. Those are our two top horses, and we keyed them, and we had Resilience was coming fast. The other Japanese horse was fifth. I mean, we had a pretty good, I would say we hit on the majority of the horses that we really liked in the race because we didn't miss on some of the other ones. Obviously, the favorite was a very big disappointment, and some of the other hot horses that took a lot of steam, people were talking up. Honor Marie and some of the other ones, they didn't look the part. But that was the part where I didn't pick them because if you watch these races, there's no substitute for actually watching the races and actually watching them and going back and watching them. And I'm not saying you got to watch them like 50 times, but like watch them two or three times and then watch the trips of these horses, and you'll see who's a real horse and who isn't. It's just the way it is. So anyway, a decent trifecta to pay out there. We are on to the Preakness next, and we'll talk about that here in a moment. But let's continue to recap. As I said, we were down four units, up a little in golf, which wasn't terrible. Big golf tournament coming up this week with the Wells Fargo, which we'll discuss here later in this segment. And then we got the PGA next week, so a major on the horizon. So that is good. But let me get this reminder out of the way. We will not have Better's Last Stand shows the next 2 weeks. So remember that. Mark your calendars. Whatever you need to do, if you're looking for it, it will not be out. We're taking a couple weeks off. I am going out of town. So, I could probably do it while I was on vacation, but I don't know what my schedule is going to be like. So I will continue to put all my picks and Sam's picks and anybody else who's contributing picks for the week, Preakness, golf, AFL, all the other things that we do. We will have those up on the BLS_PRP Twitter or X page. You can find those there. So be sure you're checking that the next couple of weeks. I will be back in the first week of June to have a show. And then I'm going to go back on vacation again for a couple of weeks after that. So this is a slower time of the year as far as my job goes. So it's the only little time that I can get away. So we'll take advantage of that. But The plays will not go away. You still have those on BLS underscore PRP, and you can always get a hold of the guys on the radio or myself. I'm sure I'll be calling in from time to time. Watchdog radio show, Pine Room on the Watchdog on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. So if you have questions, comments, anything you need to do, get it at us at BLS underscore PRP. Contact at thepineroompodcast.com. Pineroomstudios.com, our new website. You can message us there, or you can give us a call on the show. The text line's always open, so hit us up if you have any questions or anything that you think that you need a little bit more insight on that we don't get to over the next couple of weeks. Please feel free to reach out. Again, recapping the Kentucky Derby, it was a really good race, and we closed the book on another year of the beginning of the Triple Crown season. But we go on to Pimlico next week. The Derby was, as far as the handle goes in the United States, I think it was like $210 million or something like that, which to me seems low, but it was up 10% from last year. So it's good to see a little bit of a resurgence in horse racing. It was struggling a little bit. I thought maybe it would be a little bit better than that, but across the world, it still crushes us. And nonetheless, an improving trend there. As we go into the Preakness next week, have, about 10 horses or so who are talking about being at the Preakness next week in Pimlico. I know Bob Baffert's sending two. Muth, who would have been in the Kentucky Derby, would have been a serious contender and would have been one of the contenders on the front. So he would have been a pace factor for sure. And then you have Imagination. So you got two horses from Bob Baffert. Muth won the Arkansas Derby. And like I said, would have been in the Kentucky Derby. Imagination was second in the Santa Anita Derby. And it looks like both of them, the plan is to work them at Santa Anita this weekend and send them out to Pimlico early next week. So keep an eye on that. Tuscan Gold also going to be in for Chad Brown, most likely. Mystic Dan, not certain he'll run or not. I imagine they probably will send him. I'm not sure what kind of shape he's in right now, but they say he's eating, so that's a good sign. So most likely Mystic Dan for Kenny McPeak, of course. Seize the Gray for Dwayne Lucas, likely to go in there. He won the Pat Day Mile there on Kentucky Derby Day, so you want to take a peek at him maybe. Patriot Spirit, Michael Campbell, Illinois Derby won't be a factor. Informed Patriot, Hardspun is the father of that one. That's a Steve Asmussen. That one maybe hasn't raced in a lot of great races yet, so we'll see. And then Copper Tax, the local Federico Tessio winner that every single year is the they get their own automatic qualifier in there from the Maryland Jockey Club there. So that one will be Copper Tax. Sometimes they've had a few that have been able to at least be pace factors and stuff. Most of the time they just fade away. And Real Madrid, oh no. So that's not good. Bayern Munich scores 67th minute here. UEFA Champions League semifinal. Second leg now. Barcelona. Real Madrid now trails 3-2 to Bayern Munich. Oh, no. So we actually have a future ticket on Real Madrid that we gave out a long time ago, a couple months ago, actually. Great goal. Jeez. But not done yet. All they need to do is tie it up, get it to extra time, and then we can hopefully win. Santiago Bernabeu rocking right now, but now it just went dead silent. Antonio Rudiger. Oh, jeez. He couldn't make the play against his old team. Oh boy. So anyway, that was a live ticket that we do have, but we're not looking very good right now. Dortmund wins yesterday against PSG to advance to the finals. Though they will await the winner of this one. Dortmund, much the best there. Most people thought PSG would crush them, but if you look at Dortmund, they had a young team, they had a hungry team, and they were just the better side in both of those legs, and it showed. So, but congratulations to them. They're rebuilding their entire team again as Luka Modric comes on and replaces Toni Kroos. Let's see if Luka has a little magic left in him. So Kentucky Derby in the books, on to the Preakness. We'll talk more about that. Bob Baffert's going to have a strong hand there. He's going to be very motivated as he's still banned in Kentucky. And he took it down last year with Johnny V. And what was the horse's name? It escapes me. But he was a front-end horse, got the lead pretty easily, and cruised on the victory, held on. We gave that one out here and on the radio show, so we keyed him on top and put some others in behind. So that was a good one, if you remember that. On to the hockey playoffs. Interesting stuff here. Carolina falls down 2-0 to the Rangers last night. But not really surprising. That's two wins on home ice. Carolina probably could have won that game last night. Just didn't get the goaltending they need. So now the Rangers in a good spot there, heading back to Carolina for game three on Thursday. Then you got Panthers Bruins tonight, game number two. So by the time you hear this, that will be a decisive either 2-0 lead for the Bruins or a 1-1 series tied up. Florida looked like they were rusty in that first game. The Canucks and the Oilers started off tonight, game number one. And then last night also, Dallas in our bad beats section. Let's just go right to that right now. Stars money line, puck line, or under in the game. My goodness, what a crusher. Dallas leads 3-0 at the end of one, goes on to lose 4-3 in overtime. Nathan MacKinnon ties it late. They win it in overtime. So Colorado, a team that's just very resilient, and their goaltending is stabilized now. And we thought they may be done, but no, they're not. They're not going anywhere. And then the under in the Bruins-Panthers game, game one, 0-0 end of one. 0-0 with under 10 to go in the second period. And you're thinking, oh, I got this halfway through the game, and you haven't even given up one goal towards that 4.5 middle line there on the total. Oh, and an incredible goal by Real Madrid if this isn't offside. Absolutely incredible off a set piece, change of direction. Hopefully Vinicius Jr. got this because I bet him to score a goal, but this is absolutely incredible. And Josh Kimmich is grabbing his head like he got shot, and I don't know. Oh, Harry Kane. Shut up, Harry Kane. Quit crying. God, Harry Kane's one of the most unlikable soccer players, at least on the field. Apparently off the field, he's a pretty good guy, but we'll see what happens here. Bayern Munich is crying bloody murder right now, like their guy got wounded in battle. But I think he really just got probably a friendly fire elbow from somebody, but it had nothing to do with the goal, so I really don't know. So anyway, set piece, corner kick, played out to the top of the box, drilled in, goes right through the entire Bayern Munich team. That's a dive. It's an absolute dive. That's total fake job. And shame on Bayern Munich for perpetrating that. That is a terrible, terrible, terrible falsification. Well, this referee's got his hands full now. This is getting out of control. Both sides, the benches are clear. This wasn't even anything. This was nothing. This was a guy got his hands kind of high around the neck area of a player. But the guy's got a bear hug on him, so he's just fighting him off. That is a total dive. If they take the goal away, it's going to be shameful. And even more shameful is that this guy just dove like that. Absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, back to business. Hockey playoffs raging on right now. We're into the second round, and the series are starting to heat up. Boston and Florida in what's going to be a great series. The Rangers and the Hurricanes, the winners of those will obviously meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. Colorado and Dallas, great game last night to come from behind win by the Colorado Avalanche. And then the Oilers and Canucks start off in the Battle of Canada. They take the goal away from Real Madrid, which is just absolutely awful. Really, really, really bad call here. Oh, my. Absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Boy, oh, boy. That really burns me up because this dude absolutely took a dive here and he just got rewarded for it. That's why people don't like soccer, I guess. So, ugh. That's a tough one. NBA playoffs moving on. Just total garbage. These games aren't even close. They're blowouts every night. The point spreads don't matter at all. They're just I don't know how anybody watches them. Oklahoma City Thunder win the other night. Celtics destroy the Cavaliers. Nuggets down 2-0. That one's an interesting one, but again, two blowouts in these games. So there's no buzzer beaters. There's no last second possessions. Very little intrigue in any of these games, other than maybe that Philadelphia and New York series. But really, really overhyped. Favorites 27-20 so far in the NHL playoffs. 24-23 to the over so far in the NHL playoffs. In the NBA playoffs, favorites 32-16 straight up. 25-23 ATS. The unders now 24-24. Those started out pretty hot. Not anymore. And then home teams, 31-17 straight up. So the home teams are getting it done. And they're actually covering, and they're winning, obviously, on the money line. These games just aren't even competitive. Another thing that's not been competitive that much lately is golf. I mean, I guess you could say it's just a bunch of mediocre guys when Scheffler's not playing. And then when he plays, he just rolls the field. So trying to find winners, not always easy there. Again, last week we had some guys beating around the bush but couldn't get it done. This week we go to the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow in North Carolina. Very popular course. We've had some believe the PGA's been there. I imagine that maybe the U.S. Open had been too, but a familiar course to a lot of people. I'm looking at guys like Max Homa. He won here 2 years ago. Probably going to be a contender here, so we'll go with Max around 22-1. Matt Fitzpatrick around 29-1. The English have played pretty well here. A lot of Englishmen have played well here. Wyndham Clark, defending champion last year. Don't usually like doing that, but I think he'll contend here, so I'd play him in a top five or top 10 situation. Again, Wyndham Clark around 18-20-1. Ashkay Bhatia, we had him a few weeks back, gave that winner out on here, and it was a really big price. I'm not going to get quite that price this time. He'll be 50-1, which is still pretty fair. And then Steven Yeager, he's getting tipped by a lot of prognosticators. I'm not sure I like that. He's around 50-1 as well. Let's take a peek with him. And then I thought that Will Zalatoris, I don't think he's played this course quite to, if he has, it's maybe been once. But 46-1 I thought was very, very intriguing for him. That is an incredibly inflated number for a guy who we had been tipping quite a bit, and he'd been contending as his game starts to get back in form. And then I thought Cameron Young was a fair price at around 34-35-1. So again, recapping, Homa, Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, top plays, Ashkay Bhatia, Steve Yeager, Will Zalatoris, and Cameron Young, my additional plays for the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow this weekend. A couple other things here, industry news. Listen to this bet. A better place, $100 three-leg parlay back in May. Rangers, the Texas Rangers to win the World Series. That one's in. Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. That one's in. Oklahoma City Thunder to win the NBA title would pay out $1.71 million on a $100 wager there. So if the Thunder can come through, this guy's got to be pretty happy. And if I'm him right now, after the Thunder win that game one, you start thinking about trying to hedge your bet. Try to scrounge up every single cent that you possibly can find and start looking for Timberwolves futures, as well as well, I guess you could play a little bit on the Nuggets because you're going to get a really big price on them. And then who's the other one that I'm forgetting? Dallas. There you go, Dallas. Dallas, and start, you know, get some of that plus money and start trying to build this up to where you can at least get them to the finals, win some money somehow. Get yourself turned a profit here. You're getting down to where you're probably a little ahead of schedule with that, but you can start maneuvering a little bit. Timberwolves 6-0 straight up, 6-0 against the spread. As I said, these favorites are just destroying these teams in these games. The games aren't even close. The product is just horrendous. I don't know how anyone watches it. I really don't. Because if you watch it as a bettor, you're just putting yourself through misery. So you can just follow it on your phone, and it's a lot less stressful to you. But just trash. The NBA is total trash, and I just can't get over how many people that I really respect their opinions in the sports betting media and other forms of sports media really respect their opinions. And then they really, I got to say, they get this one wrong. I think the NBA is at an all-time low. It's just an unwatchable product. It doesn't mean the players aren't great athletes. It just means they're bad basketball players. And it's a bad product. Too many teams, rosters suck. Just garbage. A lot of exposure on the Minnesota Timberwolves too. They were kind of a hot team. They obviously had a very good season, and people kept waiting for them to falter, but the public and some of the sharp guys jumped on these guys at giant numbers. So you're getting like 60-70-80-1 on this team from way back. So books will not be cheering for the Timberwolves. They want them out of there as fast as possible. All right, baseball, just before we wrap up segment one, favorites 306-220 on the season. Home teams 276-263, so that's pretty even. And the unders 276-244 and 1 on the under. So definitely favoring towards the unders this year. You can start to see that quite a bit. If the games aren't going to extra innings, you have a pretty good shot at getting the game under. Be curious to see the first five numbers, how the first five unders versus the late game, last four inning overs, which would probably are a little bit up there because of the bullpens of some of these teams. But fascinating stuff. You always want to dive into these numbers whenever you're going to try to make plays. And the baseball betting has been going very, very well for me. I'm almost tempted to put these on a daily basis. I haven't quite done that yet, and I probably wish I would have last week, because it was I was on a run there at one point. I think I'd won 27 of 30 bets, and that's just unthinkable in baseball. But like I said before on here, I've completely went away from playing teams, sides. I'm not playing any of them. I've played very few of, if any of those in recent days, only if they're underdogs. So I had the Nationals a couple of times, a couple other plus money, the Royals, a couple teams who were plus money, the A's against the Pirates and so forth. But I'm not laying any prices with these big favorites. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not even going to lay 140. I'm not laying 150. I'm not laying any of that. So I'm playing the team totals. If I think a team can cover a 180 spread, minus 180, not spread, but a money line, then I'm going to play them to score over 3.5 or 4 runs, because I think if you feel that confident that they'll cover that, then you're pretty sure that they'll win, you know, by scoring 3 or 4 or 5 runs. So that's how I've adjusted. And if there's a team that I like, a team that I think is in a favorable matchup against the opposing pitcher, I'm going with the run totals. And then the unders, the first 5 unders have been very good. If you're finding 4.5s out there, there's a lot of value on that. If you can find pitchers who have been a little bit stingy and not just been gas cans, and they're you got to look through the stats every day, but comb through them, find guys who have not allowed a lot of walks and have you know, been very resourceful in their pitching and I guess economical in their pitch count, and you can find good pitching that will take you through 4 or 5 innings, and then you may give up 1 or 2 runs, and you got a little bit of a cushion there. So be on the hunt for those. Don't do them blindly, but you can sort them out. Team run totals, first 3 or 5 inning team run totals, and then the early game first 5 unders and overs. That's where I've been doing most of the damage in from the baseball front. So if you have any thoughts on those questions, again, BLS_PRP, give us a call on the Watchdog hotline anytime. Pioneer on the Watchdog Monday, Tuesday, and Friday every week. We're gonna take a break here on Better's Last Stand, show number 86. We're gonna come back, hit on a couple other things going on. We talked a little soccer, but we'll elaborate on that. French Open starts next week. We'll give some early insight on that. And then Aussie Rules round number 9 is here already. It's hard to imagine. It is Better's Last Stand, show 86 from the Pine Room Studios. We'll be back in a moment.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in Better's Last Stand, show number 86, Pioneer Studios, downtown Wheeling. Going to help with soccer match going on here. Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. Right now it's 1-1, assuming they don't take away another goal from Real Madrid, which they absolutely Should not, but it doesn't look as if this could come down to an offside. It's just incredible how this support works. Another goal check. Real Madrid scored two legal goals here, and they're probably going to get it taken away. Oh, no.
They're counting it.
Wow. No offside on the goal. It'll count.
They're going nuts in the Bernabeu.
All right, back to business here. As we're going to get some. That was the second goal. Oh, wow, I missed this. So Real Madrid storms from behind, scores twice in the last five minutes of the game, take a 2-1 lead here. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, like I was saying, soccer, I love it. The dive that Josh Kimmich took. It's rightful that Real Madrid come out as the winner, because they got totally shafted with that first no goal. So anyway, we've got Real Madrid live, a nice live ticket on them to win the UEFA Champions League. Looking forward to having a shot at that one. We'll probably get a hedging opportunity too, because we'll be going up against Dortmund, who's a good team, but they will definitely be a plus price in this matchup should Real Madrid hang on here. So 7 minutes of stoppage time, plus all the time it's took to really that goal. So you're going to get at least another 10-12 minutes here in Bayern Munich. We're not finished yet. Premier League race down to two teams now, Liverpool has kind of crashed out of things, and Man City and Arsenal, basically a two-horse race as we head down to, I believe, most of the teams have two matches left, a couple have three matches left. Should be exciting. All right, French Open tennis is upon us next week. I won't be here to talk about it, so we're going to get going right now, talk a little bit about the French Open. Clay court season starts. Obviously, it's been a little bit of time since we had the Australian Open, the first major of the season. And the biggest story right now is Novak Djokovic, who is looking as I don't want to say feeble, but he's vulnerable for the first time in over a decade right now. Easily a decade plus, his career has been amazing. And we were on heavy last year in French Open, got the job done, gave that winner out right here on the show. And I'm not sure we can go back to him right now. He just hasn't played enough tennis right now. Would I ever say discount him? No, but I'm getting a little bit worried. He's only played four clay court matches so far this year. He's three and one in those matches, which is fine, but it's just not enough tennis right now for me to recommend him. He's one of the favorites. Alcaraz comes in, Carlos Alcaraz. Carlitos Alcaraz plus 140 to win the event. He's 5-3 on clay this year. He was in the semifinals, I believe, last year, and Djokovic took care of him. Yannick Sinner is coming in here with a potential hip injury, so he had been playing the best tennis of anybody. In the recent months, won the Australian Open, which I was against the Miami Masters, the Zverev in the final, Djokovic didn't work out for us there. Sinner has gotten a little bit better, I will agree with that, but to me he's still a little bit vulnerable physically, so again it shows here, so he's potentially injured here, so you're going to have to keep an eye on him, and a plus 350 I can't recommend that on Yannick Sinner with the potential injury looming. As it is with him, so keep an eye on that. Again, I'll post all these BLS underscore PRP on my official picks, but again, Alcaraz, Sinner, Djokovic among your favorites. A couple of guys that I think warrant a little bit of a look here. Alexander Zverev has played very well in clay. He's 4-3 on the season. Had a lot of nice, good losses, it was a good match. He's made it to the finals of the French Open once, and made it pretty far last year coming off a really bad ankle injury. So I think he can be a little bit of a dark horse in there. If Sinner goes out and Djokovic isn't his best, Nadal's trying to come back off injury. I'm not sure he's going to be fit. He's 5-1, that's way too short for him. Hasn't played enough tennis at all. Alcaraz plus 140. He hasn't been very healthy this year either. So you got some vulnerable favorites. So that's when a guy like Zverev maybe steps up and gets his first major. Stefanos Tsitsipas, a guy I mentioned, playing great clay court tennis right now. He's 12-1, he's 10-2 on the season on the clay. I really like him a lot. I think you get value on him, and I think depending on the draw, obviously a lot of this depends on the draw. He can draw out one of these vulnerable guys as the number one, or he's an equal seed or close to an equal seed with them. I think he's got a really good chance to come out of there. So the Greeks just never get the job done, but at one point or another, his talent will probably prevail, and he'll get through a tournament where the better guys just falter. So keep an eye out for Tsitsipas, you can get him at least 12-1, maybe around 15-1. Casper Ruud's another guy, he lost in the final last year too. Novak Djokovic, this is his best service by far, he's 13-3 on the season. He just beat Djokovic on Montreal clay, so he's playing pretty well right now. I don't love his compete level compared to these other guys. Like Zverev and Tsitsipas, to me, compete so much harder than Casper Ruud. Casper Ruud is awesome on clay. But he can be beatable as the match goes along. So I think that'll come down to his draw. If there's guys in there I think can tax him a little bit. Then he might not be worth the play. But at 14-1, he's definitely in consideration. So you got Tsitsipas 12-1 or better. Ruud 14-1 or better. Zverev 16-1 or better. And then Holger Rune, another guy, actually 8-1, priced a little bit lower than these guys right now. He lost to Sinner in Montreal. He's 5-3 on clay on the season, 6-4 last year. This guy's really coming around. I talked about him a few years ago. Actually, probably about a year and a half ago. He's going to eventually win a major. It's just a matter of time, how things line for him. He's getting good, he's getting better, he's getting more experience. He's a really young kid. I'm not sure he can break through here, but I think he potentially could win one of the draws here in one of the courts. So keep an eye on him. 8-1 might be a touch low for him at this point, but We will monitor and see. And then the thing about clay too, you got to take into account some guys who are not necessarily great players all the time. Francisco Cironello stands out, and Marco Echeverri is a soccer player. Francisco Cironello, he's 6-6-1. He's probably not going to win this, but he's going to be a dangerous matchup. So be on the lookout for whatever quarter he gets in. If he's going against a guy who's rated higher than him strictly because of his hard court play or whatever, you may want to take a shot. And I'll have those posts. I'll be looking into those matchups. Anybody that Shirondolo or Echeverria play, I will be taking a hard look at that POTUS to see if they have what it takes to beat these guys on clay. They're both from Argentina, and they're both really good on clay. So we'll see. Echeverria around 100-1, and Shirondolo 66-1. Again, I'm not saying that they can win it, but they may be able to get to the quarterfinals. And upset some nice plus prices along the way. Women's draw, we'll see what happens again. We have no idea how the matchups are coming out, the brackets are coming out. Iga Swiatek, however you want to say it, she is the favorite, even money right now. She's just never impresses me. I mean, she's just like robotic. This is her best surface, so it's really tough to beat her on here. Last year we came so close with Carolina Makova. She took her, won the first set off of her. Bad luck. Makova, unfortunately, is hurt. Wrist injury for her. Kind of reminds me, hopefully he's not as bad as Dominic Thiem, who in the men's side, we don't even talk about him anymore because his wrist, he's never gotten back. He's 3-6 on play of the year. I feel terrible for the guy. He's a top two player. He's a nobody. Hopefully Makova can come back and be ready for Wimbledon, we hope. But it's really a shame because she was around 25-1, and I really like her. Her game is really, really good all around. Great energy. Really good player. Beatriz Hadid Amaya, or you can hear people call her EHM, Brazilian girl. Made a really good run in the last year. We made some money off of her. She's 40-1. Keep an eye on what course she comes out of or goes into, I guess you should say. But a lot of this will come down to matchups. BHM beat a couple of better players than her because it was on clay last year. So we'll take a peek when that comes out, see how her draw looks. Arena Sabalenka, obviously she's had some trials and tribulations. She wins a major, her boyfriend jumps off a building. It's been a tough year for her. She's getting better on clay, though. I got to give this girl credit. I thought she was only ever going to be a good hard court player, but she's getting better on clay. She's getting better on grass. She's 6-2 on clay so far this year. She was 14-3 last year. She's improving to the point where she's almost making it to the semis or quarterfinals of these quarterfinals, easily semifinals. By just being so much better than everybody else and working so much harder. And when she figures it out, how to play a little bit better on clay, I think she's dangerous. 450 is a touch too low for me to take a shot with her, but I would not be going against her as a upset candidate early on as you would have maybe in past years. She's really worked on her game on these different surfaces. Daria Kasatkina, 6-2 on clay on the season. She was 12-6 last year. She's 40-1. She's in good form. She'll be one we'll keep an eye on. Elena Rybakina, 12-1 to win it. Maybe a little bit of an injury with her. Not certain what she's got going on right now. She's going to be a little bit hampered. She was out last year for this tournament. So hopefully she seems to be okay, though. I think it was just precautionary that I saw on her because she's 8-1 on clay, 11-2 last year. She wasn't able to play this last year. She had to withdraw, I think, in the second round. She had to forfeit because of an injury. So that was a bummer there. So keep an eye on her. She's going to be 12-51 range. No question that she can win this. Maria Sakkari. Battled really hard here. Got to the semis. I think she may have even gone to the finals two years ago. But we just can't trust her anymore. She's 7-3 on clay, 40-1. At some point, she'll win one of these, and I'll pull for her. But I can't recommend her at that low price. The one really interesting one for me in the ladies' draw is Miriam Breva. She's like a teenager, and I mean a young teenager. I have no idea how she's doing. She made great runs in the Australian Open, in the U.S. Open last year at like 14 or 15 years old. Her body hasn't even matured at all yet, but she's really good. She's going to win a major, and it's going to be quicker than we really think. She's 6-3 on clay on the season. She was 23-4 on clay last year and made a really nice run to the quarterfinals. 16-1. Touch low, but I'm definitely keeping an eye on her. This girl is extremely talented. And if you just want to see the epitome of heart and soul in a competitor, and a girl who's playing the game that she loves, for that, and not for money, and not for status or anything like that. You can still see that young innocence in Miriam. Flipping on, watch her play. She's awesome, and I think she's going to be very, very dangerous in this tournament. And if she's not quite ready to win this, I wouldn't expect her to win, but she's probably going to make a threatening run, and it won't be too long before she does what she set out to do her entire life and compete on the Grand Slam level as Real Madrid. Oh boy. Interesting thing here now, Bayern Munich is offside, though. Clearly offside. Bayern Munich scored, but they had two guys that were actually offside here. I think Bayern Munich stopped because they saw the flag go up. Of course, Thomas Mueller. Of course, he's an idiot. He's behaving like he always does, screaming and yelling like a goof. Unlikable team by Munich. From their goalkeeper to their old center forward, Mueller to their coach, Tuchel to their goalkeeper, Neuer to their goal scorer, Kane. They're all unlikable. They're breaking this guy. They got a break earlier. Yellow cards all around, chaos. Anyway, back to Tennis Mirren and Riva. Going to be one I'm going to keep an eye on. So, BHM, Daria Kasatkina, Elena Rybakina, Mirren and Riva wants to keep an eye on for the women's draw in the French Open. And again, Karolina Bukova. And she's the one who's out. I'll tell you, quick golf. She's not great on clay, similar to last year. She's a good enough athlete. If she picked it up in any at all. She may be able to contend. Then Sabalenka, I think she's going to still be able to get through the early rounds because of her talent alone. She's just going to be better than a lot of these girls. Looking forward to the French Open. Going to watch a lot of that while we're on vacation. So excited about that. If you have any questions, again, BLS_PRP or just call on the Watchdog hotline during the Pinder on Watchdog Monday, Tuesday, and Friday every week. A couple other things going on here. So, in NASCAR, we'll talk about this with Sam, but bad beat last week, I guess, if you had Denny Hamlin or Chris Buescher, closest finish ever in NASCAR. I guess Hamlin led 71 laps. He gets bumped late and gets out of line, and he loses his bumper. Before that, caution came out, and then Kyle Larson and Buescher came down the line, and literally you couldn't see a piece of dental floss or toothpick between the two guys. So, incredible finish. We'll talk to Sam more about that. Let's go to AFL round number nine now. Thursday's game, Melbourne and Carlton won't matter here, but I like the game under. Then you got Port Adelaide and Geelong early on Friday morning. Again, won't matter here. The Cats get back on the wagon. They haven't lost the Port at home since 2007. We'll go over to 172. Port lost several guys last week. Connor Rizzi, the captain's out. They had 18 times, which shot terrible. So I expect that to continue, but I think they'll make some more goals this week. So that's what I'd like down the river. On the games that you can bet, six. This is a Saturday morning, so it's Friday. Sydney and Fremantle. We'll go with Fremantle. They will be catching 5.5 here in Sydney. Fremantle's a team I like to back up after 5-3 season. I think this is a good spot for Fremantle to be at home. In a really close game. I think this will be a grinded out kind of team to offset each other. 156.5 total. Under that. Then we got St. Kilda and Hawthorne. Interesting matchup here, St. Kilda laying 9.5 at Hawthorne. That's not enough. Hawthorne coming off a win last week over Western. I think they'll be very happy about that. And they will probably lose this match. So 3-5 St. Kilda, 2-6 Hawthorne, St. Kilda minus 9.5 under 159. And half Real Madrid are through to the final. They will take on Borussia Dortmund. Good stuff there. Under Saturday game, GWS and Essendon will be the 6-2 Giants. It's 5-2-1 Bombers. The Giants have lost 2 out of 3, so it's a little concerning. But the roof will be closed here. At the, I can't remember the stadium's name, but it has a roof on it. So I think there won't be any elements to an issue there. So over the 170.5 and late 8.5 GWS to get back on track. And they're up near the top of the ladder, so they want to stay there. Another Saturday game, or Sunday, early morning, this is a Saturday too. These times are messed up on here, I've got to calculate awesome time through English time. Western Bulldogs and the Richmond Tigers. Western off a terrible loss to Hawthorne, taking 3-5 and 1-7. Tigers are really bad. We'll go over the 167.5 here. Go with Western back on the horse and get a big win here. Dogs, minus 19.5 Western in that contest. Western Bulldogs, Melbourne in that contest. Melbourne and Gold Coast. Melbourne in at 1-8. Gold Coast 4-4. We'll go with Gold Coast minus a 43.5. Basically the name score is going to be Melbourne this year. Also under the 169.5. West Coast, the Eagles, then you on the Collingwood Magpies. West Coast comes into it, six. Collingwood won 4-5. They've actually unbeaten in the last five. They had that draw, 4-3-1. We'll lay the 41.5. Collingwood played a very good match last week. We had them. We'll go under the 172.5. Their defense would be very, very tough for West Coast to do anything against. And then you got Brisbane and Adelaide. Both these teams coming in 3 and 5. Brisbane lost four guys last week. They had a guy blow a hamstring in warmups. They had a guy get a concussion in two guys. blow their ACLs out. So whenever anybody tells you that American football is one of the toughest games, you'd be stunned how many guys get hurt in this awesome rules football. No equipment. No rules to protect these guys other than some clear and obvious ones. These guys are absolute warriors. So we're going to Adelaide -5.5 at home. I think Brisbane coming off a nice win last week. A little bit of letdown. They lose four starters. It's going to be tough for them to recover from that. They'll go under 169.5. They're without their full complement of offensive players, which is going to be a problem with the Crows. We don't score a lot anyway, and like muck it up in the middle. So I think that is a dead under. So let's go through these again. It'll be Geelong and over, Fremantle and under, St. Kilda and under, GWS and over, Western and over, Gold Coast and under, Collingwood and under, and Adelaide and under. That'll do it for week number 9 of the Australian rules football season. Excited to have that going full swing. Something I look forward to every single week. It makes getting up a lot more exciting, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a break here. On the Better's Last Stand program for you, show number 86 coming to you from Congress Studios. We're going to be back after the break and talk with our man Sam. We won't see him for a couple of weeks, but he'll be giving his plays anyway. Talk to Sam after the break, talk racing, baseball, and a lot of other things. It's Better's Last Stand, show 86 from Congress Studios. We will be back in a moment.
This show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. Better's Last Stand, show number 86. Joined now by Sam the Man. He is probably not real happy right now as the Pirates take another loss, another series loss to a bad team at home as they go down to the Angels today. Sam, welcome to the program to talk. Before we get to the racing and all that stuff, let's get right to the business of the day, and that's the Pirates and the debacle the last 2 days again, and then the Skeens news. It's just not been a good week for Pirate fans.
No, and I knew when I looked at the schedule when Colorado was coming into town that this could be bad. You know, like there's a serious chance that this is not going to go very well.
Right.
And that was obviously that happened. And then the Angels, like I texted you, Matt, last night, I always say, oh, well, these teams we should beat. We should beat these teams. But then I was like, oh, man. The Pittsburgh Pirates are those teams.
Yeah.
We are one of them. When people come and they see and they play us, they probably think the same thing.
Yeah.
We get to play the Pirates, man. We're probably going to take 2 or 3, easy weekend.
I think there's so much truth in that. I think you see teams like the A's, the Rockies, and the Angels saying, you know, we're not going to get a ton of wins this year, but we can play with this team. We're on the same level as the Pirates. So those are winnable games of those teams, and it looks like they're a little bit more focused, whereas the Pirates just look so baffled at the plate. Sawinski, I mean, these guys just look like they have no clue on what the hell's going to happen up there. They look so off balance and just out of sync. It's terrible.
It is terrible, and it's starting to really hit me that we just do not have a superstar on this team. Anybody that stands out, especially that's paid, you know, the high amounts that they are for our payroll.
Yeah,
they are not getting it done in any way, shape, or form.
And the superstar that may be there on the horizon is still in AAA. They didn't like the way he came out of the 4-day rest start on Sunday, so. He's scheduled to have another start down in Indy, and now you know that he won't be called up until the next homestand now because, you know, they finished 3 here at home this weekend and then go out on a road trip. So he's not going to be up before that, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and then, like, you know, you got O'Neill Cruz. He's the MLB leader in errors right now, which is great. You love that. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. We have better players and we're just off to a worse start.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's everything. You're right. It's hard to even to speculate because it's just everything you could imagine that goes wrong, it does for this team.
Do you think, them. Matt, that they'll get 30,000 on Saturday for Skeens? Do you think that they hit that point where, like, man, there's so many – I've seen so many seats at these games when they have them on TV. It's like, do we need to fill the ballpark for Skeens one time?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine it, yeah. I mean, I think he'd be the only thing that could fill that park.
Honestly.
That's it. That's the only thing. Like, that's why I don't – like, he'll probably never pitch a road game in his life, and every game will be at home.
Honestly, he might. He might be the first pitcher to have, like, 10 days rest because he's not at any home games.
We don't want him thrown on the road because then that means we might come home and he might not get a start, so we can't take that chance. Oh my. Anyway, another lost series in the books for the Pirates. Let's move on to more promising things here. We had the closest finish in the history of NASCAR Cup racing last week. Amazing finish. Kyle Larson edges out Chris Buescher to take the Advent Health 400 at Kansas Speedway. This race had a lot of action in it. It had good racing. It had a lot of passing. It had some wrecks. It had some untimely cautions. It had it all. I thought overall this was probably one of the better races that I've ever seen at Kansas. But that also proves that this new car, for some of the problems that it has had, it is a pretty great car as far as competition goes.
Yeah, I agree. And I was very worried that the Kansas race was just going to get totally lost with all the sports that were going on, and they got blessed by that rain delay.
Yes,
it did. And it carried that Sunday night, and it was perfect, man. It was perfect. And when I saw the articles and, you know, everything, you wake up, you see the finish and the stuff, and it really was the closest finish ever. I was like, damn, man, at Kansas of all places, I would have never thought this is where the closest finish in NASCAR history would take place.
Yeah, no, I know. You figure, especially with some of those ones that we've had at Talladega recently, and
seriously,
like this was right up there. Overall, I mean, I thought there were several cars that at any point of the race had a shot to win. Obviously, Denny Hamlin probably took the worst luck of it all with the late caution. It looks like he was going to win. I thought Ross Chastain had a good enough car to win at one point. I thought Kyle Busch was knocking on the door, but not quite there. And then obviously Buescher and Larson both in the mix. What were your observations amongst some of those guys?
I love seeing Buescher up there. Buescher's been pretty quiet this season, and I didn't think last year was a fluke. I thought he was a pretty damn good driver, and I'm glad to see him in particular because Brad's been up pretty good this year. Brad's been pretty solid, but it was nice to see the other half of that team get up towards the front and stay up there.
Yeah, well, perhaps some momentum is kicking in for the RFK boys as we head to Darlington. This is a tricky track. A lot of times track history means a lot at this place. Some drivers really, really have horrible numbers here. A lot of times it's one of those tracks where you're just kind of snake bit when you're out there if you don't like it. And we got a lot of contenders here. Obviously, Larson and Hamlin among those at the top of the list. But I was trying to go a little bit deeper down the pool here. I considered William Byron, but I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about him. He's kind of went into a little lull, as you mentioned last week. It's like he's already in. It's like maybe last year he thought like he made his move too early. Like he kept winning all those races, and then when it came championship time, he didn't have the edge that he probably needed. So maybe that worked against him. Maybe it's just a different mindset for his team. I think he's a contender here, around 7.5 to 1. But I ended up landing on Brad Keselowski this week at about 18 to 1. I really didn't even remember how good he was at Darlington until I started to dive into the numbers and see that his average finish 11.3, which is outstanding on a track like that, and his last couple performances there. And they wouldn't be ones that you would remember, but that's the good thing about it is I feel like he's got more momentum than he had at this point last year, and he already was going for back-to-back top six finishes at Darlington last year. What are your thoughts on Brad, and who are some of the other contenders that you're looking at?
Matt, we might be in some deep shit because we are on the same exact guy. No. And last
it
time
never this, works when we are.
Last time this happened, our guy was in 33rd, and I texted you, it's over, and he ended up right up in the front. So I have some hope, but yeah, I love Brad. The numbers are great. Like I said, he's been solid but quiet, and I think that this is one that he could just not run away with, but just come out and you know, drive like he's been driving. He's been solid this year.
Yeah, I see some momentum for that team, as we talked about with Buescher. I actually like Buescher a little bit as an underdog here, maybe for like a top 10 play. He's around 24-1 to win it. I think he's been solid here. The last six, he's around a 12.2 average. I mean, that's a good finish at Darlington. So I'll be keeping an eye out for him. Who's another contender or two that you like?
I look at Joey Logano.
Oh, no.
But there's just something about it that I'm like, ah, man, these Fords have been so off this year. His number's good, and he's been good in the past, but I shied away from it. But Ross Chastain is another one that sticks out to me that I think that he's been up there these last couple of races, and I think they're starting to get into the other gear because your teammate's in and you're not so far.
Yes.
So I think that it's like, hey, man, we put all this money into you. You're kind of our number one guy. Let's make it your number one guy.
Yeah, Chastain was my second choice, too. So I had Keselowski, Chastain, and Elliott as my top three. And then Byron, if he had a little bit better of a price, but I didn't love his form. Totally with you on Chastain. I see the momentum trending in the right direction. He led some laps last week, had some bad luck, but that usually means a sign of a guy that's knocking on the door. And this kind of track suits him, just being the aggressive style of driver that he is. He's led a lot of laps here in the past, which is a good sign also. So I think if he qualifies well, I expect him to be an absolute contender on Sunday. Back to Logano. I mean, he's got three top tens in the last six here. That's good. But, man, last week, I just see things happening to him that just never used to happen to Joey Logano. It's just he's not what he once was, and I don't know if that's ever going to get back. I don't know because I needed him last week in a bad way in a couple of matchups, and I thought he had a good enough car to be able to pull it out, and then again, just bad luck hits him again. So he's definitely a serious concern to me. Who are some guys that under the radar? What is Eric Jones going to be back in the car this week? It sounds like he may. He obviously runs very well here, but I don't know if I trust his health.
I mean, I don't know either. I would trust him over Heim, to be honest.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Somebody that is switching teams, Michael McDowell, I think he could easily find his way up into the top 10. I'm not exactly sure why he's switching teams. Obviously, money is probably the biggest thing. But everybody that's signed with Spire, I mean, LaJoy's had a pretty solid season, but, you know, Josevar has been all right. But I don't know. It strikes me as like the Justin Haley thing that happened when he left. Like, man, you're leaving Colwood. You're really going to leave front row. They give you a great car. Got a great looking car. I know that's not all about it, but.
But he's won races. He's contended. Like, you never would. I just feel like I do. I agree. This is either like a lateral move or a downward move for him.
Yeah. And I don't know if Spire has like a ton of like funding or money that they can. Yeah. They obviously do because I've also read that they might buy this Stuart Haas charter if they go up for sale too. So I don't know where they're getting these funds. Right. I don't know where they're getting these funds from, but it doesn't strike me as a championship winning move.
No, yeah, I agree. Maybe it's just a situation to save his seat and get longevity in that seat. But I don't know. We'll keep an eye on that. It'll be interesting to see. But McDowell has been, you know, better than I even realized that he was with his current ride in the last couple of years. Obviously, he wins Daytona and has contended in a lot of races, road courses, super speedways, and it's had done a nice job for front row. So yeah. Surprising, but again, this is all business, so you just never know what you're going to see. All right, so let's talk a little bit about some of your guys that you've been high on. You've been high on Noah Gragson. He had another good run last week. Alex Bowman, our guy's starting to put together some momentum here, but this track doesn't usually treat him very well, so I can see him being behind the wall fast here. It's killing the momentum. Who are some guys under the radar maybe you're looking at this week?
I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying under the radar, but like Ryan Blaney, I'm putting him as an under the radar for this week. They're just all the Fords, man. All the Fords besides that are picked to win it. They just seem to – something's up. We've been saying it. Something's not right.
No, you're right about that. That's what is right. You are right about that. And it is like – it's almost like RFK is the only stable Ford team. I mean, not that they're winning races, but they're the only two that I feel like the drivers are competing well enough to even be in the mix to win. Obviously, Buescher could have easily won. Brad could have easily won the week at Talladega. I mean, these guys are knocking on the door. Blaney's been okay because I can't fault him. He's just the model of consistency. He really is. You just kind of forget about him out there. But the rest of these guys all have been terrible.
Do you think that Gilliland can sneak up into the top 10?
I, I considered looking at him as a potential long shot. I did. I mean, he's like 500-1 to win, which is, but because this is such a tricky track, but the more experience you get, it's like your second time at Darlington, you learn so much from the first that you actually get a lot better. So perhaps that works in his favor that, you know, it's just like his third time there in a cup car. Maybe he gets a little momentum. Maybe he can keep it going because you have so many guys coming back to the pack. Kyle Busch isn't what he once was. Obviously, Logano. There's no more Kevin Harvick. You got a lot of top 10 spots to be had here by a lot of unproven guys. Tyler Reddick's another guy I think could be a contender here.
Yeah,
I considered definitely. Him a little bit, but just decided to go another way. I thought his price was a tad bit low. What do you think about the 23-11 guys? Bubba's ran here well here too.
Yeah, I think that I was looking at Reddick also. I definitely find him to be obviously the superior driver on that team. I would pick him to finish higher than Bubba, but Bubba gets those leads, Matt, or gets in those top tens, and he sees red, and he's in the wall. You know, the same old, same old. I want him to do well because I love how aggressive he is. I think that that's great, but if you can't contain it and keep the car intact towards, you know, for the green or white checkered, it's pointless.
Or at least the overtime play.
Right. Or there's like the five overtimes
goes,
you get.
Every race goes the overtime now, which I guess is kind of exciting for people. Let me ask you about these. Like last spring here, we had a couple of one-offs here in the Todd Gilliland did run well here, which is good to see. And I think he is a good driver. But yeah, Justin Haley and Harrison Burton up in the top 10. What do you think about either of those guys' chances?
We not will good. Not see Harrison Burton up in the top 10. There's just no way, Matt. He needs to go back
to trucks or Xfinity.
I don't understand what you do when you're like a team like that, the Wood Brothers. Do you re-sign him again? What is it about him? You can't get anybody else. Is your team that bad? Like you're one of the most historic teams in the Cup Series, but that's not getting you anywhere anymore.
They must have owed his dad a favor or something.
Must have, man.
There's a lot of that in racing. That's for damn sure. As we before we go over to F1, so your official pick for the race was Brad K.
Yeah, we're going Brad, man. We're on the Brad train.
We're both on Brad K this week at Darlington. All right, so let's go over to the IndyCar guys right now. So we have we're going to be at the Indianapolis Grand Prix circuit here as we start Indy month. Alex Palou, defending champion. But first, we got to talk about this Penske situation. I saw that they suspended some of the leadership in the team. Cindric's dad, one of the ones, so which is interesting. Austin Cindric, who races in the Cup Series, for those of you who don't follow it like we do, and his dad is the chief engineering officer for Penske Racing, and that's quite interesting. Sounds like Roger was kind of pissed about these guys cheating, but then again, maybe that was just a front. What are your thoughts on that?
I think somebody that was high enough knew.
Right.
This wasn't like a little secret, I think, that was kept between everybody. And I find it odd that the other drivers, like McLaughlin and Power, knew they had it but didn't use it.
Right.
But Newgarden did. Yeah. I think that's odd, and nothing's still added up. I think Newgarden is a total cheater. I really do. It makes me question him winning all the races. It makes me question everything because it's like this happened. They had to make the technology to figure this out because they noticed something weird in the data. So it's like I don't know if they got away with it as long as they could until they got caught. But I don't trust anything that they say. And it's a shame. Fair. It's so odd that Penske owns IndyCar too. And like a lot of the tracks, it's so, so weird to me, the dilemma now.
Yeah, sure is. What a mess there. For a competitive race circuit, they've really created quite a mess now in a cloud of suspicion over top of the races as we head to Indianapolis. And you know that's going to be the talk of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the next several weeks as we have the road race this week and then 2 weeks until the 500. What are your thoughts on this race? I mean, Alex Palou won last year. He led 54 laps. A couple guys, Pato O'Ward ran well. Alexander Rossi ran well. Christian Lundgaard ran well. Felix Rosenquist had a top five for McLaren. Any early thoughts on this race? Anybody stick out to you that may be worth a play other than Stingray robbed a crash?
Right. Stingray robbed a crash. Renus VK and to be nowhere. If you could bet that, I'd bet that. But you can't, that's kind of a
finishing a position bet. Lower than 20.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of a personal one. But honestly, Matt, I think like the names that always stick out, the Dixons, Powers, even like an Alexander Rossi. I think that he can run very well, but something about Marcus Ericsson. He always sticks out to me. I think he is a great driver. I really do. And it always comes back to when he won the Indy 500, the way he had to battle to keep the lead when he was driving for Ganassi. Like, that was one of my favorite racing things that I've ever watched live. And I just think, I think he's super talented. So my gut says Marcus Ericsson.
All right. I like that pick a lot. And I like that. I'll like that in a few weeks probably too. Cause yeah, that, that Indy 500 day, he got the job done, and I was on him that day. So I was pretty, pretty excited about that winner. So
that was a nerve wracking one, eh?
Yes. Oh boy. Yeah. I was sweating quite a bit there. All right. So let's recap the F1 boys last week. Lando Norris surprises the world and takes out Max Verstappen in the Grand Prix of Miami. What were your thoughts on this one? That was kind of a, I guess, kind of a stunner, but it was good, good for the circuit, I would say.
I thought it was great. It's about time Lando wins. I'm happy that McLaren has kept with this guy and he stayed with him and they finally get the win. But, like, was it a competitive win?
Right. Not really.
It's just like these guys get leads and then there's just aren't cars around them.
Right.
And it's like, man, I'm just watching him drive to the finish line or, like, waiting for him to maybe screw something up to make it closer, which I don't want. But I don't know that when somebody has a lead towards the end, I just want other cars to be there. We rarely see a close F1 finish, if ever.
Yeah, no, I mean, you, it's a great point because you really look at all the races this year and how many times has there been a pass on the track for the lead where there wasn't somebody having an issue or someone had went to the pits and the other guy took over and didn't relinquish or whatever. But yeah, there's very few times. The only time you ever see a pass for even any of the front six spots really is on the first lap of the race. And then by the time they all spread out, it's over again. No one really tracks people down other than it seems like your own teammate because your cars are so similar. But it's disappointing. But I guess more disappointing was, did you see some of the prices of some of the food items down there?
Yeah, I saw like a lobster roll for almost $300.
Yeah. Nachos 180. Like, what the hell? I mean, it's Miami. I know it's expensive, but come on, people. They're
Matt,
pricing.
That's the exact reason. Wow. That's the exact reason I talk about why I would never want to go to that. Like,
I know.
It hit me. They do like that fake yacht, the fake marina, the fake water. Like, if you were sitting there, Matt, you get to see about 3 seconds of every lap. And I thought, that fucking sucks, man. That sucks.
It does. It is. Yeah, I don't know. The prestige, I guess. But the one thing that was kind of funny to me is that when Trump was there and like the people were loving seeing him and he was shaking all his hands and then he went up to that like this penthouse spot and I was looking at a video of it and it would be like Trump was like talking and there's just these cars just going by in the background and you literally couldn't even tell they were cars. They were going so fast. Like you literally couldn't see anything. Like it was, I don't know. It seems like a lot of money to see a bunch of just flashing things go right by you. I'll stick to NASCAR where I can actually see the cars.
Yeah, seriously. And then I saw that like people were pissed at McLaren because a picture of Zach Brown and Donald Trump came out shaking hands. It's like, Jesus Christ, man. They get a win and it's like, oh, look at this. Look who you sided with. It's like, God damn.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's paying respects to whoever. I mean, he was talking to Lando. Like, it's. People just want to make everything so polarizing. That was like in complete innocent. He's from down there. He went down there to watch the race. Right. He lives not far from that area. It's like, Jesus, let the guy go. God, he already has enough problems in the world. Let him enjoy himself at the racetrack for a few minutes.
Dude, what would you do if the next race he was at fucking in McLaren's paddock with the hat on? Like he was just like their good luck charm.
I like seeing him with like a stopwatch and like some other stuff. Yeah, well, maybe he'll be in Darlington, although that doesn't seem like a Trump-type area. I mean, like it is as far as the voting people, but like I don't know if he goes to that part of the South very often, but I'm sure he would be well received there anyway.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yep. So another great race weekend in the books, and we'll move on to this week and hopefully have some good racing. The F1 guys are off until we head to Italy next week. So that should be interesting. I'm assuming Verstappen will have a good, strong shot of getting back into the win column. One last thing on the racing side of things. What are your thoughts on this media contract now? 2025, Amazon and TNT now join the mix with Fox and NBC. $7.7 billion deal here. Looks like 14 races on Fox, 14 races on NBC, and then 5 each on TNT and Amazon. The only thing this worries me about is
streaming on Amazon is a concern for betting purposes for me. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's great. I think it's also awesome that Amazon and TNT both work together. Like, we need Dale Jr. because how do you have a whole NASCAR season without Dale Jr. like on a broadcast? I find that to be insane. Sure so is. I think that that's great. But yeah, they need to make sure that this the live stream is as close to live as possible. They've got the funds for it. There cannot be delays. There cannot be commercials and finding out my guy crashed when I get back.
Like
they need to. There will be no. Honestly, I can't see them not having picture-in-picture with everything. I think that they know that it's a bad idea to not have picture-in-picture.
I do, too. And to me, this would be a chance for them to steal the product right from these other two who have done it for a while now. No commercials. I still don't understand. For the sake of the streaming situation, I won't understand why these networks don't team up. Like, to me, it would make sense for Amazon and TNT to co-brand this thing and have it be on TNT's cable channel and streamed on Amazon Prime or however they wanted to do it. To me, that would hit more people. It would stop the lagging for those people that needed it for betting reasons. It would give you the better, the faster speed. I think they're silly for not doing it, but I know they only want their brand on everything. It's just like the NFL when we're having to watch playoff games on Peacock. That are like 45 seconds on delay and you're going to your betting app and somebody already scored and they haven't even got to the 20-yard line yet on your TV. So I don't know. It's not a good sign of the times from a betting standpoint. It's going to make for some frustrating times. But anyway, it's good to see NASCAR getting a giant TV contract like that. It's telling you that the sport's coming back. If they would listen to Michael Jordan a little bit more and get this charter situation fixed, then they could really start to cement themselves into to being just a powerhouse of you know racing entertainment for the next 50 years. But we'll see if they can listen to MJ. Hopefully that they do. Anything else stand out? Anything interesting to you in the NBA playoffs or NHL?
The Timberwolves they seem to be for real. I can't believe how much they suffocated Jamal Murray and how much it really got to him. Like I find it crazy that one guy, Anthony Edwards, is just like really piecing this whole thing together on the court verbally, leading these guys for how young he is. I really do think he is going to be the next face of the league. Like, not Tatum, not Jaylen Brown, not fucking John Morant, none of these flashy guys. It's Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, and honestly, to me, it could be, and if it turns out to be like that, it could be Anthony Edwards and Gilgeous Alexander. Like, yeah. Those are two guys that like seem to keep their mouths shut and just do what they need to do to help their team. Both got young teams that are, you know, to places they've never been before. The T-Wolves are 6-0 straight up, obviously, and 6-0 ATS. Like they're covering the spread. They're dominating people. So yeah, this could be exciting Western Conference playoffs. And then obviously Knicks Pacers has a lot of intrigue. I guess the Cavs are going to be the sacrificial lamb there with the Celtics, but other than that, should be some decent series, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Knicks are playing some pretty good and awesome basketball.
Lost another guy, though, again.
I know.
They're running out of bodies.
You know what I mean? They could hit the Undertaker's music, and then the next thing they know, the aircraft carrier's Randy back and
comes up.
Back he and ready up. To go.
Here he comes. Yep. Yeah. I guess never say never. We've seen it all. Your Rangers rolling along.
Yeah,
I hate
buddy.
To say it. I hate those bastards, but they're playing really good. 2-0 up on Carolina.
Chris was giving me some shit when I was talking to him the other day. I was like, Chris, it's just Vince Trocheck. I need the local guy to win the
game winner last night.
I don't like anybody else on that team. It's like the Clippers. I like Steve Ballmer, but fuck the players. You know, it's like I need Trocheck. I wouldn't cheer for him if he was an Islander, though. That's for sure. Fuck the Islanders.
Well said. All right, Sam. Thanks for everything. We'll see you next week before I take my vacation break and we're off for a couple of weeks. So thanks for joining us, buddy. As always, we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Go Bucks.
All right. That's Sam the Man. And I messed up earlier. I said next week we wouldn't have a show. We will have one next week. I'm leaving after the show next week. So we'll have a show next week. We won't have a show the two following weeks after that. So sorry about that. Anyway, that'll do it for Better's Last Dance, show number 86. We'll have show number 87 back here next week and then 2 weeks off. For vacation. Appreciate all the sponsors. Appreciate everybody that came out for the Beer Mile on Saturday. We will see you next week in the Pine Room on the Watchdog and right here on Better's Last Stand. Have a great weekend.